This meeting of House Fisheries to order. It is 8:40 on April 2nd, and present are Representative Johnson, Ledoux, Edgman, and Seaton. And at this time, I'd like to remind everybody about their cell phones. Today, we have two orders of business. First is we're going to have an introduction of SB 304. That's CFEC information. And then we will go to our roundtable discussion. Wanted to get 304 on the agenda so everybody could have time to look at it and ask questions. So Senator Olson had to go away to a finance meeting, so if his staff would come forward. Representative Edgman.
Just a quick clarification. Our last meeting of this committee is in on Friday. Is that your schedule is for the rest of the session?
No, we have the following Wednesday, we have the AYK roundtable.
Okay, thank you.
So we'll be meeting on Wednesday, and of course we'll be on the 24-hour schedule probably by Friday or Saturday when the conference committee is appointed for the operating budget.
Mr. Chairman, if I just...
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Do I understand that we're going to just hear this and hold 304? Because I have a meeting. I also have to go to Senate Finance as soon as at the call of my staff. So I want to make sure that if we need the votes, they're here. But if we're not going to do that, then that will be.
Yes. No, our intention is just to get 304 introduced, and then we will hold the bill, and we will hear it on Friday.
Thank you.
Good morning. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with the presentation of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dave Graham, staff person to Senator Donnie Olson, who is the Community Regional Affairs Committee is the sponsor of Senate Bill 304. The senator is partaking in meeting with the governor on certain projects that are in the supplemental, and after yesterday's press conference, maybe it's going to be a different meeting than might be expected. Anyways, glad to introduce this bill, and it's really a bill that offers the ARDRS organizations economic information from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. As this committee is well aware, commercial fisheries is a substantial economic engine for the state, and particularly for your coastal communities up and down our coastline. Not everybody's got a gas field or oil field in their backyard. Commercial fisheries really is the probably the most diverse economic activity throughout the state. The bill is pretty simple. It allows the ARDRS groups to obtain commercial fisheries entry commission information on fisheries activity, commercial fisheries activity within their region free of charge. Currently, that information is costly, and it's mainly on just the my understanding is the analyst time spent in it. So it could be cheap, could be depending on what kind of information is requested, $15-$30. It could be more expensive in the thousand plus kind of dollars. In the past, the senator is getting a lot of requests for this kind of information as there's developments in his district from constituents, even to the extent that sometimes requests for harbors or airport extensions like that is coupled with fisheries and commercial fisheries economic activity that could bring to the community or to the region. I think you heard Representative Martin Moore recently address the body on the economic disaster in the lower Yukon area and the need for a longer runway. That's for example of something. I wanted to pass out here just, you know, what are the goals of the ARDRS group, and why are they really ideally suited for the kind of information that the Commercial Fisheries Industry Commission. If you look at my pass out on the Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program, and I've kind of highlighted down there 3, 4, and 5 on the first page, and then it's, and 5 is probably the more relevant one. It's where this speaks about the department is to assist each organization to, and on the next page, provide services designed to encourage economic development in local communities and businesses, collect and distribute economic information relevant to the region, participate in state marketing campaigns and state trade missions, and probably develop and implement strategies that attract new industry, expand international trade opportunities, etc. So it would seem that the information that Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission has and that can provide these can really provide a real asset to the more remote rural areas of the state. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be available for any questions.
Great, thank you. Representative Ledoux.
I'll be real blunt, Mr. Gray. There are a number of us in this building that have heard that this bill, which appears to be a pretty good bill, relatively innocuous, is simply a vehicle bill designed to add the scallops and the hair crab, a bill which hasn't progressed. What's your comment on this?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the title on this bill is fairly tight. It doesn't talk about any crab or any other kind of thing. It talks about information from the Commercial Fisheries Industry Commission to the Arders Group. That's what the bill was presented, and that's what we're pursuing.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
Can you commit yourself on behalf of Senator Olson to say that if anybody should attempt to add these things onto the bill, if it gets out, that Senator Olson will oppose that effort?
Through the chair, I don't know what I can commit to anything. And, I guess I'd be presumptive that any one senator could tell the House what to do, as well as any one representative could tell what the senator could do in a bicameral thing. I don't think that the senator wants to kill this bill, put it that way, and that the core substance of this bill is what his intentions are getting past this session.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux.
Will Senator Olson be able to join us on Friday when we're hearing this bill further so that we can chat with him about this?
I hope so.
Thank you.
Through the chair.
Further questions? I would just like to make sure that when we hear the bill on Friday, that you provide us with the statutory limitations on CFEC, that they can't already do this. And so if you can bring to us either the statutory or constitutional framework that requires them to charge an ardor for information, and if this isn't already available. And so I just wanted to ask you to be prepared on Friday to share us with that information.
Okay.
Are there other questions? Appreciate you coming and introducing the bill, and we will see you Friday. Now we are on with our continuation of our roundtables, and again, I wanted to set the stage that the purpose of these roundtables is not to accuse anybody of anything or fault anybody for a management regime that has allowed any foregone harvest. The purpose of this is strictly to have a conversation with the industry, with fish and game, with processors, with anyone who's concerned with foregone harvest. And again, the definition we've been using of foregone harvest is that, you know, basically our direction is to make sure that we have, or fish and game is to have, the minimum escapement goals met in monitored streams. And then there's a maximum goal. And that maximum goal means that when you get above that goal, then we are fearful that we are actually causing damage to the stream by those over escapements. Those over escapements can come because of things like fish digging up other fish's eggs because you have too many fish there, viral outbreaks because you have, or bacterial outbreaks because there's just too much biological matter in the water, those kind of things. Or it can be such things as we've seen in sockeye salmon where you have so many young fry that they eat down the available plankton and you come out with fry that are very small and that then when they go out to sea, they're so small that they have a very low survival rate. So that's a concern about being over the maximum escapement goal as well as the economic concern of having foregone that harvest for the people of Alaska. In other words, if those fish are all surplus to the stream, then what we have is a situation in which we are losing that economic benefit for the people of Alaska. Now, we all want to recognize that we can never do this precisely. You have definitely ups and downs, and so what we're looking at is trying to look at those monitored systems where you have a continuation of above the escapement goals on a continuous basis and or on a generally continuous basis, because then we might be looking at a situation where with adaptation of processing or of transportation or of fishing time or whatever else that we don't know of right now could be effective in helping us recover that excess or foregone revenue, not only to the fishermen, the processing community, but also through the fish taxes to the state of Alaska. So I just wanted to set that stage again for everyone and also bring up a couple things that have come out in the previous meetings. First of all, we had the discussion of in pink salmon, the analyses of whether those escapement goals are the true escapement numbers or whether it's a multiple of that, which is a very interesting discussion. We also had the question of should we be looking at foregone harvest just above the maximum escapement goal or should we be looking at the foregone harvest from the midpoint of the target escapement goal, and so anything above that would be basically surplus that could be harvested. And so anyway, those are things that we've talked about. We also talked about direct marketing vessels and the potential for opening up somewhat the direct marketing vessel criteria to allow in those areas that are distant and processors can't afford to send a tender or to do it that way, to have direct market vessels be able to harvest in a different way and get that, as well as we pointed out last time that a lot of areas haven't looked at and utilized the transporter provision that we passed just a few years ago that allow fishermen to aggregate harvests on one boat, write a fish ticket, a general fish ticket, instead of weighing and selling the fish to at that point, and then transporting the fish back to town in an aggregate manner, which allows some of those further distant over escapements to be handled by fishermen themselves. So those are a few of the things that have come out of the previous meetings, and today we're looking at Cook Inlet, Lower Cook Inlet, and Bristol Bay. And so I think we'll start with, not Bristol Bay, sorry about that, and Prince William Sound. And so let's start with Prince William Sound. We'd have the wrong audience or the wrong people here. And so if we could have the folks in the room that wanted to join the round table come up to the table. Mary, did you want to come up? And Jerry? And then we'll introduce it. Yeah. And anywhere. You can be at the spare tables here. Kate, did you want to come up to join? You're just observing?
The general manager.
Is there anyone else that wanted to come up? Oh, Okay, so just for everybody's information, we have Jerry McCune, representing Cordova District Fishermen's United, Mary McDowell, representing Pacific Seafood Processors Association, the room, as well as the committee, and I think that I failed to note that Representative Johansson has been with us for quite a while. And then online, we should have Cordova Fish and Game, Homer Fish and Game, we have Anchorage Fish and Game, we have Dave Otness in Cordova. Dave, are you online?
Yeah, roger that, Paul.
And we have Dave Cobb from Valdez Fisheries Development Corporation, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and Dave Cobb, could you just, for the committee, explain very quickly Valdez Fisheries Development Corporation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, Valdez Fisheries Development Association is a mom-and-pop small hatchery aquaculture corporation in Eastern District of Prince William Sound. We are not a regional association, as is PSWAC. We are probably one of the largest producers of pink salmon in Prince William Sound.
Thank you. And Dave Otness, are you representing anyone or other than yourself or yourself?
Just myself, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Dave. And just a little ground rules here. You know, you guys on the line can't see us, and I can't see you to recognize you. So as the conversation goes along, it's going to be fairly informal. And if you would just, as soon as there's a break or you want to jump in on something, please do so. But I'll need you to identify yourself, and not by affiliation each time. That'll just be done the first time. And then after that, just identify your name for the recording secretary so we can get the minutes recorded correctly. And I believe we also have David Reggiani, is that of PSWAC, online. Is that correct, Dave? Are you David? Is it David or Dave?
Yes, Representative Seaton, Dave Reggiani is there, you bet.
Okay, great. And so PSWAC is one of the regional aquaculture associations, just so everybody on the table knows where we are. So we have before us the reports that have been very helpful from the Department of Fish and Game and that they've done for the last couple of years for us. That's 5J08-01, which is entitled Success in Achieving Salmon Escapement Goals in Monitored Systems. And we also have the report, which is 5J08-03, estimated number of salmon above the upper range of the escapement goal and estimated value of unharvested fish. So with that, let's go to Cordova, or John Hilsinger, are you online today?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here. John Hilsinger, Director of Commercial Fisheries Division.
Great. And John, would you like to go ahead and, like last time, give a brief introduction and then have your area biologists give us an assessment?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Again, John Hilsinger. I've got here with me in Anchorage, Dan Gray, who's the regional manager for Prince William Sound. And in Cordova, we have some of our Prince William Sound area staff, in case there are detailed questions, Bert Lewis, Glenn Hollowell, and Jeremy Boats. And I also have with me here in Anchorage for Lower Cook Inlet, Tracy Lingnow, who's the regional management biologist. And in Homer, we have Lee Hammerstrom, the area biologist for Lower Cook Inlet. And as we did last year, I would suggest that Dan Gray and Tracy Lingnow could give a very brief summary of some of the excess escapement issues in both in Prince William Sound and Lower Cook Inlet to kind of start off discussion, if that sounds good.
That sounds very good, and we just have them introduce themselves for the first time and then go ahead with the presentation in the order you choose.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll have Dan Gray go first.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Gray, for the record, and I'll be speaking about Prince William Sound area fisheries, and I'll begin with Upper Copper River sockeye salmon. This is a valuable and fully allocated fishery among subsistence, personal use, sport, and commercial users. The commercial fishery opens on or near May 15th with two fishing periods per week. Escapement is monitored with Didson sonar at Miles Lake, and the breaks between the periods allow escapement of the many sockeye salmon stocks that spawn in various tributaries of the Copper River. The typical situation that leads to excess escapement is a delayed run, usually associated with cold spring temperatures and low water levels. This can result in an early season closure of the fishery to allow escapement to catch up with the escapement curve. The problem arises when the run resumes in a strong wave and jumps ahead of the escapement curve. And the remainder of the run must still be managed to allow for escapement of all segments of the run, which represent various spawning stocks. The department is attempting to find a sonar site in the lower river to give us some advance notice, perhaps 1 to 2 days of advance notice of run entry in advance of the Miles Lake sonar site. We have had a site in the past, but it has dewatered and we no longer have that advance window on the world. The next stock that I'll address is the Copper River Delta coho salmon. There are two primary causes of excess escapements with this stock. These are common to many of the coho fisheries around the state. One is that these fish tend to mill in the fishing areas, and then they move on high water events. Our aerial assessment of coho salmon is impeded by these high water events because of either poor weather or turbidity. The other primary cause of the excess escapement is the loss of markets as processors close at the end of the season. This usually happens in the third or fourth week of September. We continue to conduct aerial surveys and, of course, continue to count escapement without a fishery to impede that. And finally, I'll speak to the Prince William Sound pink salmon fishery.
Excuse me, Dave, can you lead us to the pages that were on in the publications here so that we can just follow a little closer and see where we are?
Okay, the table is in 5J08-01 on page 4.
Okay, great, we have that. That's under Central Region, and we're under the Prince William Sound, which is the first grouping there.
That's correct. Does that suffice, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I was just, before you went on to, I was having trouble finding the, if we have the coho in the, you know, in the 03 document, if you have a page for that, or if it's not in there, that's fine. I just don't want people turning through the pages looking for it while you know while we're listening.
Looks like page 4 in that document is pink salmon.
And page 2 was sockeye for Prince William Sound Copper, but if
and then page 6 looks like coho.
Page 6. Okay, is Prince William Sound on there, or is that just?
Oh, that's AYK. I'm sorry.
I didn't find it. If it's not in here, that's fine. I just don't want us to be looking for something if we're not. Okay, that's fine then. Go ahead.
All right. Prince William Sound pink salmon. The wild stock pink salmon escapement goal is spread among 200 index streams. While there are some areas of concentration in the northern and eastern districts of Prince William Sound that attract fishing efforts, most of that escapement is fairly dispersed and difficult to target with purse seine vessels. Throughout most of the return, the vast majority of fishing effort is directed toward the four pink salmon hatcheries around Prince William Sound, and that leaves the wild stock streams pretty much alone. In 2003, the escapement above the upper end of the range was a direct result of limited processing capacity. And the good news is processing capacity has increased dramatically since then, allowing a record harvest of 60 million pinks in 2007 and wild stock escapement within the escapement goal range. And that's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. If we have any questions, or we'll come back to this in a minute. So let's go ahead and get the other report from Fish and Game for Lower Kirkland, and then we'll come back.
Okay, Mr. Chair, this is Tracy Ling now. And as Director Hilsinger said, we have Lee Hammerstrom in Homer. Also, I believe there is Ted Otis, who is our research biologist, and the assistant area manager, Ethan Ford. Just kind of a background as far as harvest go, for pink salmon, or for Lower Cook Inlet, pink salmon makes up the largest harvest. In the last 10 years, it's averaged about 1.6 million, and sockeye is the second harvest, an average of about 300,000. Other species are harvested, but these are the main two targeted species. As far as values go, in the last 10 years, sockeye has averaged about $1.16 million. This is the ex-vessel value to the fishermen. And for pink salmon, it's about $525,000. As far as the prices go, the prices in Lower Cook Inlet for salmon has remained relatively stable and actually in some cases increased a little bit. As far as over escapement or exceeding escapement goal issues that we have is Lower Cook Inlet's quite a bit different than most other fisheries, at least in the central region. They're probably closer related to fisheries in southeast where you have multiple smaller fisheries. These fisheries are remote. They're weather dependent on whether you can get to them or not, you know, and the fish don't care about the weather so much when they migrate. Some of the others are because of the prices and distances and increase in fuel costs that tenders are choosing not to go to these places. Fishermen are choosing not to make this trip. They're trying to find other fisheries that tend to be closer and actually where they can make some money at. As far as management goes, management's very flexible in Lower Cook Inlet. In the few places I've managed, they're probably one of the most liberal managed fisheries there are. Lee Hammerstrom, the area manager, he can do quite a bit of things. Once escapement goals, he can pull markers, he can increase time. It's not like other areas which are restricted to times. Limited hours, limited periods. Just as far as participation go, seining is the most predominant fishery in Lower Cook Inlet, and there is a small set gillnet fishery. As far as the seine fishery go, there's about 86 permits, but I believe it was this last year. They actually average about 30 in the last 10 years, but this last year there was only 19 fishermen. And I guess that's really all I have, and just stress the fact that the buyers, the fishermen, because these are smaller fisheries, there's a lot of coordination through the area manager as far as processing capacity, as far as availability of markets. Lee's flying these fisheries several times a week, and is in contact with fishermen multiple times per week, trying to coordinate these fisheries and harvest as much as we can. And I guess with that, I'll leave it there.
Okay, thank you. And I guess since you're there, we may as well start start with you and possibly Lee and Homer wants to chime in. I was wondering, with the smaller diverse stream systems or kind of remote stream systems, has there been any requests or impetus behind the direct market vessels or direct processing out in those areas, or has it pretty much been small seiners needing a tender situation? Has there been any development of direct market vessels like there has been here in Southeast?
Mr. Chair, those requests typically go through the area manager, and if Lee's on, I'd certainly like to have him address it if I could, please.
That'd be great. Lee, are you on?
Mr. Chairman, this is Lee Hammerstrom and Homer. I guess I would just like a quick clarification. Direct marketing, is that like a floating processor? Is that what you're referring to?
Lee, that's the new changes that we made that allow a fishing vessel to process their own fish that they catch, and whether they freeze them or whether they process them in whatever way, they can do that under very much loosened restrictions that would be there for a floating processor. So it's a direct market vessel, the ability to process their own catch. And I was wondering whether any of whether there's been any interest up there. I know it's developed quite a bit here in Southeastern, and wanted to know what was happening, if there had been any interest or any requests for that for utilization of those remote stocks.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, there has not. I have not had any such interest as that. The same fleet in Homer, or I shouldn't say in Homer, in Lower Cook Inlet, is primarily comprised of very small vessels. Generally, those vessels must have tender service in order to transport their fish from these remote areas. There are only a very small number that have the ability to chill and brine fish on board and transport them in that fashion. So primarily they're small boats, and have not had any inquiries to this point about the direct market vessels.
Okay, thanks. And just the general philosophy, though, would be that if I'm trying to figure out if that would be a possibility within those areas for those streams that are generally having escapement that is not being utilized, if fishermen came forward and asked for utilization with direct market vessels in those areas, I presume that Fish and Game would work with them to allow that catch on a fairly flexible basis once the minimum escapement had been reached?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you're correct. We'd certainly consider anything that might help us utilize these stocks. I think it's important to understand here in Lower Cook Inlet, these systems tend to be relatively small, and with a species like pinks that tend to command the lowest value, the market tends to require large volumes. Often our small systems are simply insufficient to provide the kind of volumes required to make economic sense to some of the fishermen. So it's a difficult situation. Now, not all the systems are like that. We do have several larger systems that probably would be suited to a venture that you're referring to. But in general, much of the reason why we encounter this situation of surplus fish is because of the small systems and the lack of the volume.
Thanks, I do note that in Lower Cook Inlet, the foregone harvest values that we have are pretty low and inconsistent compared to some of the other areas. So appreciate your work and your flexibility. And if there's anything further that you have suggestions where we need to make any changes. It sounds like you've got the regulatory flexibility to do everything, but if anything comes up or you have any other suggestions, make sure you let us know. Does anybody have any questions on Lower Cook Inlet? Let's go back to Prince William Sound, and Jerry, did you want to chime in on Prince William Sound?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jerry McCune, CDFU. There's a couple opportunities that, if you look on paper, it looks like we're over escape quite a bit sometimes on the copper. I'll talk about the Copper River first. But lots of times that's circumstances. A couple things like the Fish and Game Department pointed out is for years, we finally did a study of how the fish hold in the river and maybe don't get to the sonar. So there is sometimes there's a possibility for another period, but we wouldn't know that until the fish actually were run by that sonar. So we wouldn't know that unless we know how many fish are actually holding in the river. On particular years, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So we're kind of run by the sonar. And some of the lot, if you look at the number of totals at the end of the year, sometimes those are due to circumstances. Maybe the fleet split up and a lot went over to the hatchery. Delta stocks, we have two stocks, the copper that go up the copper and then the delta. So it could be that the delta stocks are low and we're managing for those. And so you get less fishing time and the copper is strong. So there's many circumstances that go into this small run, but like they say, it's fully allocated. But a couple things that would help in the Copper River area would be if we could find that site for the second sonar to get a feel for the in-river fish before they actually get to the other sonar up at the bridge, then we would have a feel maybe for more fishing time if it's possible. The other one on opportunities on the there's quite a few direct marketers on the Copper River. I don't know, there must be 20, 30 guys that probably direct market, but just a couple things at DEC that we went back to. I won't go into big detail, but the one is that regulation that you cannot buy from another fisherman. You turn into a processor. You got to have a cover and all this stuff. But lots of times they need to fill their markets. In this small run that we have, they might have to buy 50 fish. They're not going to buy 10,000 pounds. And so I think that we need to relax that regulation and be able to buy a handful of fish without having a full-blown cover. If you're going to be a full-blown processor, then you should be have the boat and process and do all that. So that kind of holds back on some things there that would help on the economic opportunity. And, of course, having that lower sonar would be helpful once we find another site for that. And I think it probably has, I don't know, you can ask the department, but I don't think we're funded for another sonar site right at this time. But we just now switched over to the new sonar from the old one after 3 years of truthing it. But that would be the opportunity there. I mean, there's two stocks here, and you also got to consider the delta stocks when you're considering the copper, even though the copper might be strong. And the other thing is that I like to point out is that we're probably raising anywhere from 200 to 400,000 sockeye some years that go up there that the fishermen are paying for up the river for all users from Piswak. So that would be the things I see, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks. And Jerry, just, I'm not familiar with the actual way the fishery is prosecuted over there. Is anyone using the transporter provisions where you can aggregate someone else's fish on that vessel and take them back to town or write a fish ticket on them without purchasing the fish? Is anyone in Prince William Sound or in your part of the fishery using the transporter provisions or that you know of?
Gary McCune, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that the same, on the, usually the openers in the Copper River are 12 to 24 hours to start with, and usually it is two 12-hour periods, and the direct marketers themselves transport their fish back, they're clean, then they take them back and they box them and ship them, but most other guys, there's tenders running up and down on the Copper, which is a little different than some areas. So you can unload your fish anytime to these tenders that are running up and down. So I don't think there's anybody using transporters on the copper side. Unless it's on the sound, I don't know. I haven't heard of any.
Okay. And maybe we could ask Fish and Game there in Cordova, because the transporter permit is a free permit that's issued at the local area office. Can you tell us how much activity there's been on the transporter permit in Prince William Sound? Has that been used in the either the gillnet fishery or the seine fishery there? And go ahead and identify yourself if you can, because we don't know who will be talking.
Mr. Chair, this is Glenn Hollowell in Cordova. I am not aware of any vessels that fish in the Copper River District that are utilizing this transporter's permit. I have not had any requests to utilize it.
Okay. Appreciate that. And I think that there's a lack of knowledge and understanding by a lot of the commercial fleet. I know that Cook Inlet, there's a number of people that are using those, but there's it might be able to solve some of the problems, because when you have a distant fishery or guys don't have a tender, they can legally now put them on board one vessel and run them back to town, instead of previously every vessel, when they transferred their fish off, had to make a sale. That had to be a point of sale. And so it's up to those permits to be issued by the local department. But I know that there's been a number of guys on west side of Cook Inlet that have utilized that, because then they can just go over. They take a blank fish ticket and write it out with the boat and the person's name, do the fish ticket with a pencil or an imprinter or whatever they have to get that on there, but then they just estimate that catch, or whether it's a brailer or two, or whether they count the number of fish, and then they can transport those back to town, and then they can go to a buyer, whoever's going to do the buying back there. So it may be something that hasn't been utilized that would allow some of those stocks to be aggregated, because when every boat's having to run back to town and burn fuel and not having a full load, I know it makes the drives the economic. We have somebody else that would you go ahead and that has joined us up at the table. Would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record and go ahead and share with us?
Yes, sir. Mr. Representative Chairman, my name is Anthony Syverson. I'm an offshore commercial fisherman. I'm currently disabled. I had one question, and I was wondering, was that the Taku area that you were concerned about on using these tenders and in the Taku area, gill netting in the Taku area?
Anthony, thanks, and at the end we'd like you to sign up so we get your spelling and your name right. Okay. But that's available statewide. You just have, if someone wants to be a transporter, utilize a transport permit, all they have to do is go to the local fish and game office, and that's recorded. It's a free permit that allows those to do. We're specifically today talking about Prince William Sound.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought you. I did gillnet in those areas. I'm sorry. I did the Taku area and down, seining down towards Sitka, so that wouldn't apply.
We covered southeast earlier, but
oh, okay. I'm sorry.
That ability for transporter permits are available in southeast. You just have to talk to the guys here in southeast.
Oh, okay. Thank you for clearing that up for me, sir.
Thanks, Anthony. Mary, did you have anything that you wanted to
come forward? Nothing to add at this point, thanks.
Okay. Jerry, did you have any follow-up or anything further on that? As far as those, I think you're mainly talking about Copper River seine fish, gillnet fish.
Yeah, the sound is a little bit more complicated, but Mr. Chairman, Jerry McCune speaking, and it generally is run, for the wild stocks, of course, on the index streams that they talked about, but they also have to squeak around those and see how strong the wild stocks is to be able to harvest the hatchery stocks. So if the hatchery stocks are real strong, then they have to kind of move the fleet around. And last year was we're really fortunate in our area that we have so much processing capacity, and everybody went to full capacity. Two two crews running back to back, you know, night and day, and then the transportation with the new, with using the ferry and AML's barge, we were able to get a lot more fish to Whittier and Anchorage, and so it really was a effort on everybody's part to get 63 million fish through last year. So, you know, I don't think we could do much better than that, and they harvest as much fish as possible, and actually it was a pretty good year all the way around for everybody, the owners and the seniors. But I'm not seeing anymore, so I'm not sure. I talked to a couple seniors yesterday, sound. I haven't heard any complaints, but they usually take, the task force will be, we have that harvest task force that will be taking up how they're going to run the whole season, projected on what things would happen and how they're going to run the copper in the Prince William Sound. So I'm not sure if they had that. You might ask Glenn Holloway, but I don't think they've had those meetings yet. But usually all the divisions in CDFU, there's a Gillnet division, a Seine division, Long Line, and Pound division. But they sit down with the task force and work out each scheme for the year. And hopefully it goes by the script, but not always.
Thanks, Jerry. And that's great that several of the areas, I know we had the information that Southeast was having their, you know, task force work together on trying to identify these things. So I'm glad to hear that Prince William Sound is doing that as well, and that there's a, you know, a lot of interaction back and forth between the local biologists and all. And I would like to note for people that may just be listening in that, again, when we're looking at the records here, that the Copper River sockeye, there doesn't appear to be any system in Prince William Sound that is consistently over-escaping any significant amount of fish. So that's, you know, looks like things are, we're not having a lot of foregone harvest on a predictable basis there. So that's good. Did you have anything else, sir?
Mr. Chairman, Jerry McCune again. I got to say that the department's done a pretty good job. There's a couple little tools that I talked about earlier that would be helpful to even make the management better. But other than that, there's probably some complaints beyond me from some fishermen who have foregone harvest, you know, in the area. But overall, Fish and Game's done a good job. Fishermen grumble a little bit, but we also have been very fortunate to have good runs in the, for many, many years here, and the high run over there is 2 million sockeye. So we've been very fortunate where others had lesser runs that we've been fishing every year. So besides the harvest, we probably could use those additional tools, and that would even critique that a little bit more and maybe provide more opportunity once in a while when there is a larger run or more fish are pushing into the river than normal.
And that was those two things were the lower sonar on the copper and the DEC direct marketing, which is something that we've heard about before.
Buying, Mr. Chairman, yeah. Jerry McCune, buying, being able to buy a small amount of fish from another fisherman as a direct marketer to fill your markets, because, you know, sometimes it's a low run and or whatever, you didn't catch the fish and you need a couple extra kings or a couple extra sockeye. And but that requires, then you have to have, the way I understand the regs now, that requires you got to have a cover. And so bow pickers don't really work very well with covers in the front because you can't see. So if there was some limit or some way that they could squeak around that reg that you could buy a small amount, and then they'd have to be responsible for the fish ticket on that part. But that's pretty easy solvable, Mr. All right, Chairman.
Thanks, Ed. And for those guys that are wanting to do that, I do also suggest that until that becomes available, they might investigate the transporter permit possibilities for them to accomplish some of their goals. Let's see, we had Dave Rigorini on Pizwak, or probably mispronouncing your name there, but...
Reggiani.
Are you, do you have anything to add for us here? And as far as foregone harvest and any techniques or tools or anything that you see that could be helpful?
Mr. Chairman, Dave Reggiani speaking. No, I don't have anything to add at this time. I think, going with what Jerry had passed on, Prince William Sound's very fortunate. We've had a tremendous amount of processing capacity, and that has helped out throughout the years.
Thanks, Dave. And we have Dave Otness. Dave, are you on there?
Yes, Representative Seaton, Dave Otness, independent. Coincidentally, sitting in Cordova wanting to discuss Bristol Bay and Cook Inlet, well, also the Sound as well. But I've been, of course, fishing all these areas and tendering, and I'd just like to bring up something that's been kind of troubling, because I've seen the kind of trouble that Mark Stoff has had over the years and have encountered it myself. And there seems to be some inconsistencies coming out of DNC, according to some correspondence I've witnessed. It'd be nice to get that straightened out, but I'd like to give a good example of what a person can do when they can't take a small boat out. And this did happen in Bristol Bay 4 years ago. I was out there tendering for an outfit, and I observed this one guy who actually got DEC qualified in a 32-foot vessel, and unfortunately it made it kind of unstable and everything else. It all worked out in the end, but he went down to Cinder River for 5 days and caught and filleted his own fish. And this was after fishing the peak of the bay, the Nooshigak Coves, and then down to Cinder River. And that 1 5-day trip, he made more money on those fillets than he made for the entire season. And the guy is not a bad fisherman. So he had a good season on the Reds and everything else. But that's the kind of opportunity we're talking about advancing here. And I'd like to see it become a little more streamlined. I think arbitrary notions like processing 1.5 miles offshore. Now, who the heck came up with that? You know, that's absurd. And in general, you don't have blue bottle flies out at sea. You might have horse flies. They don't lay eggs. You don't have the bird concentration. Heck, they're all at the canneries or in the rivers. Just if DEC could address something on a more practical level rather than a book level where it would appear to be an issue. And also, I'd really love to see the guys on the west side of the inlet be able to get somewhere, because the Crescent River itself has been overescaped consistently for at least the last 5 or 6 years because of the issues of running tenders over there and the guys not being able to make that 70-mile run across. And hopefully, as a result of these roundtables, we can come to some conclusions that will allow us to address this in a practical manner, as opposed to just being hidebound by a bureaucracy. But I'm not being overly critical, but you know, I've got 50 years running around this country, and we're still about 25 years behind the times on a lot of this stuff as our markets change and our abilities. But that's about it here.
Well, thanks, Dave. And you know, you're bringing up a subject that has been brought up by in just about every area, and that is the direct market vessels and, you know, the restrictions on those. We did have some input from DEC on what those are, and we'll probably be talking with industry here quite a bit to see if there's some way that we can work with in that and not get too expansive and make things work for people around the state. Representative Edgman.
Mr. Chairman, just as a general question, more out of curiosity, I guess, expressing my lack of knowledge about these fisheries, but where is the genetic stock ID efforts in terms of a tool tying in the research and maybe someday as an in-season management mechanism, but where is that fitting into this picture in today's discussion in terms of the fisheries that we've covered?
Well, that's the first anybody's brought it up, so that's good. That's what we're having the round tables for, is basically, let me restate and see if I've got your question right. Is the question, would genetic stock analysis or some other in-season stock identification allow Fish and Game to better know where fish are going into what systems, and then therefore tailor openings to make sure that the harvest was able to get those that extra fish? Is that where we're going? We're not going to direct market vessels or individual fishermen. We're talking about a tool for Fish and Game to use to more accurately manage stock. Is that correct?
Yes, that's a good characterization.
Thanks. Maybe we can have John, Hilsinger, who would you have that would be able to relate that to us? And would that be particular to these areas, or is that something statewide that would be beneficial?
Mr. Chairman, John Hilsinger with Commercial Fisheries. We do have some ability to do in-season stock identification, and in fact, we do that in Bristol Bay on the catches at the Port Moeller test fishery. And that has actually given us some improved ability to harvest some of these stocks. I know a couple of years ago when Nooshigak was having a record run, it was apparent from this in-season stock ID at Bristol Bay that was a very strong run, and it gave the manager the confidence to keep fishing. And so I think that's a tool that may develop in some areas. We do have a limited ability to do in-season stock ID. It's about a 5 or 6 day turnaround time. So it works at Port Moeller, where the test fishery is about 7 days from when the fish hit the fishing district, and we can turn the samples around and do that, do the work, and then make our management decisions. In other areas where the fish are already in the fishing district, I think there would probably be more limited ability to use in-season stock ID. And of course, we're limited somewhat by the daily capacity of our lab. So that's definitely something that we're looking at, and we're trying to implement it in those fisheries where it can work well. And I think over time we'll see whether or not it works in some of these other fisheries like the Copper River. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Edgeman, do you have a follow-up?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Thanks. As those tools become more integrated with Fish and Game or more utilized, we'd appreciate, John, if you'd keep us informed as to how those are, and if there's a necessity for them and there's not the ability because of lack of lab facilities or something else, let us know on those if those are a tool as well. Jerry, did you have something on that point, or thought I saw you looking like
Mr. Chairman? Jerry McCune. I knew that this has been discussed in a couple seminars about the being able to genetic ID of certain stocks, and like in the Matsu particularly, if you could probably identify when those stocks are coming through, and then you could find out where the entrance exit, where they're coming through the fishery, then you could probably, I'm not going to advocate anything, but you could possibly move fleets around or do certain things to identify those stocks. Although I wouldn't want to get into the street stock management, but information is good to know the different times that these different stocks would come through. But and for each system, like the Copper is all different systems, but it's one river, which is a little different than Cook Inlet, where you're trying to manage, or Bristol Bay, where you're trying to manage different systems. We have two systems, the lower local stocks and the upper stocks. So, but the information attained from that would be, I think, in the future, would be really helpful. And I think the department is moving forward, with, like you said, with some of that, and trying to to apply that to other areas.
Let's see, are there anything else? Dave Cobb, are you on there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Dave, did you have anything to add here for us on foregone harvest? Do you see foregone harvest there at Valdez?
No, we actually don't. I would concur with Jerry and Dave Reggiani that the department has done an excellent job in managing the fisheries here in the Eastern District. And with the additional processing capacity that we've seen in Prince William Sound here over the last years, that it just doesn't seem to be a problem.
Well, good. And Dave, a couple years ago or a few years ago, we had probably because there wasn't enough processing capacity, but we had large runs that were coming back, and there was the egg harvest there because they couldn't do anything with those carcasses. Is that problem pretty well solved?
Well, I think for the hatchery here, we've developed a market for those carcasses with a pet food company that will utilize up to about 1 million pounds of those carcasses every year, and the heat continues to grow every year, and so I think that has taken a big chunk out of it. I think a more aggressive management by the department has helped with regards to the harvest. For an example, last year we had about a 27 million return, and we ended up, when it was all said and done, with about 150,000 fish left at the end of the season. So I think department has done a very good job, and the processors have taken a lot of fish.
Well, that sounds good. Is there anybody else? Or Dave, did you have anything further?
No, sir.
Okay, thanks. Is there anybody else online that would like to chime in on any of the subjects here in either Lower Cook Inlet or Prince William Sound, or generally on any of the topics that would apply, whether it's specifically those regions, or would apply to the other regions we've talked about as well? Okay, well, we really appreciate everybody attending, and it appears from all the numbers that we have is that things are going well. If either department or industry comes forward with any ideas, we do have this direct market tool that may need to be tweaked, at least a suggestion to look at that. And if anybody comes forward with any other ideas, be sure to let us know. And is there anything else, the committee? Yes, Representative Edgman.
Yes, I guess I just asked out of curiosity, is DEC participating online? Because they're not here in the audience today.
They aren't online today. And we'll.
I would have wished that they could have been here, because the direct marketing theme continues to resonate. This is our third hearing, and I'll bet you we'll hear about it in our last hearing as well.
And we'll see if we can get DEC online or in person for the next one. So, anything else? Okay. Appreciate everybody's attendance, and we will be adjourned. It is 9:43.